Well, good morning. My name is Michael McCusker. You probably know that today is Earth Day. I'd like to add to the pandemonium by an article I've written and also an article that Tom Hartland upstairs here at the station pulled off the wire. I beg your pardon, that sort of dates me. Pulled it off the internet, thought I'd be interested. Mine that I wrote is called The Sprays of Spring, so I have to give the disclaimer that this is my opinion and perhaps my opinion only in the entire cosmos. And universe, on Universe Day, I suppose you might say, every day is Universe Day. The Sprays of Spring, and I start off with a quote by Rachel Carson, "The chemical war is never won, and all life is caught in its crossfire." Sweet spring, buds, blooms, and blossoms, sounds of birds and crop dusters, skies shot with billowy clouds and mists of pesticides. The eternal war against insects and weeds is renewed. We are dusted, misted, sprayed, hosed, and powdered with some of the deadliest chemicals ever conceived to kill pickle worms, aphids, leafhoppers, spider mites, cabbage worms, spittle bugs, potato beetles, carpenter ants, Japanese beetles, corn earworms, grasshoppers, codling moths, blister beetles, as well as unwanted plants and weeds. We are exposed to insecticides, miticides, acaricides, nematicides, fungicides, bactericides, avicides, herbicides, rodenticides, pesticides, molluscicides, and predicides, plus desiccants and defoliants. These pesticides kill by simply touching insects. They kill when swallowed or by being taken into the blood of animals or the sap of plants. They kill through inhalation or by being otherwise absorbed. Selective pesticides are designed to kill only certain kinds of plants, insects, or animals. Non-selective pesticides kill most plants, insects, and animals. These chemicals are sprayed by aircraft, from tanks on trucks, from knapsack containers, hoses, and handheld sprayers. They are dusted, misted, or sprayed over farms, forests, and gardens, and are also used on school playgrounds, golf courses, the lawns of public buildings, and along roadsides. They drift in forms of dust and mist, or move with soil particles by erosion. They leach through the soil into lakes, rivers, and streams, and are carried as residues on crops and livestock, or evaporate and move with air currents. Of course, we are not only assaulted by pesticides from air, land, and water through inhalation or permeation. We drink and eat them also in fruits, vegetables, meats, and milk. 1 billion pounds of these poisons are applied annually within the United States, and it is virtually impossible to live anywhere in the country without being exposed, in many areas saturated. Wildlife is contaminated, food chains are affected, habitat is destroyed, and human life is endangered. Pesticides are linked to cancer, nervous system damage, degenerative changes in liver and kidneys, fetal injury, miscarriages, birth defects, genetic mutations, and other serious diseases. Pesticides occur in mother's milk and in the tissues of unborn children. Exposure to these chemicals cause irreversible changes that alter genetic materials in cells permanently. Pesticide residues and their breakdown products are routinely found in blood and urine samples from both urban and rural residents nationwide. Pesticide residues capable of causing cancer and mutations show up in human sperm samples. A study by the National Academy of Sciences concluded that 28 pesticides known to cause cancer and found in foods might cause more than 1 million cancers over the next 70 years. And the Natural Resources Defense Council, a private environmental group, reports that children's exposure to pesticides and potential harm from these chemicals in food is 6 to 12 times greater than that of adults. Rachel Carson, who sounded the alarm about the dangers of pesticides in her 1961 book, Silent Spring, called these poisons biocides. And that was a half century ago, coming up next year. There are two kinds of biocides, botanical or organic, and synthetic or man-made. Though the first are dangerous enough, powdered arsenic has been used for centuries and has a significant death toll, the synthetic chemicals are unsurpassed in their toxicity. Initial development of these chemicals was during World War II, following the discovery of DDT. Ironically, the growth of the synthetic pesticide industry started in the war years by testing these chemicals on insects as possible agents to kill human enemies. The government regulatory process is a failure as much in pesticide abuse as in Pentagon contracts. The political and commercial copulative relationship between agencies and industry rules out any effectively honest regulation of pesticide use and abuse. In fact, government agencies rely on manufacturers' data about pesticide safety with the ingenuous claim the process saves taxpayers' money. Other information about toxicity levels or research is either suppressed or often falsified. The standard used by both government and industry is a so-called safe level, and that's in quotes, of toxicity, though it has been determined there is no safe level of exposure to anything that causes cancer or mutations, which is used short of outright banning of a substance and is generally assumed to not cause immediate harm. As these chemicals are new when first labeled, there is no other method of determining long-range or cumulative effects than wait and see. Even when a chemical is harmful to test animals, industry and government officials say they cannot be sure they are harmful to humans. Labeling information is itself suspect, particularly claims that a pesticide is safe or that its ingredients are non-poisonous. Whenever a substance is banned or restricted, which is seldom, unrestricted use of stocks on hand are usually allowed to be sold and used, while a number of equally toxic chemicals that are in the wait-and-see stage are put into use as replacements. Chemicals that are singled out as a result of harmful effects are rarely equated with the multiple effects of cumulative exposure to dozens of pesticides, often simultaneously. Not only has the ingenious development of synthetic pesticides outrun the knowledge of their disastrous effects on living organisms, but residues from their manufacture accumulate in largely unregulated dumps where some break down into even deadlier compounds that seep into land, water, and air. Carol Van Strum of Five Forks, Oregon, in her 1983 book, A Bitter Fog, Herbicides and Human Rights, echoed a call by Rachel Carson for a constitutional amendment to protect citizens from environmental poisoning. "To those who bear the risk," she wrote, "exposure to poisons is a matter of life and death. Decisions about poisons which disrupt the basic mechanisms of life and the biological integrity of future generations raise profound moral questions. Society cannot afford to entrust such decisions to corporate or political entities that exempt themselves from the restraints of morality and ethics." And that's Carol Van Strum. Current law requires a person threatened with exposure to a toxic chemical to prove that irreparable harm will result, while the information for such proof is kept secret or not available because adequate research has not been done, not to mention revisions of studies that are watered down to support the toxic chemical industry. Van Strum believes that, quote, "a society insisting on its right of informed consent would quickly redirect pest control toward non-poisonous methods of integrated pest management," unquote. Pest control, she writes, would adopt nature's system of checks and balances essential to a true democracy. Rachel Carson said that the only reason the Bill of Rights contains no guarantees that a citizen shall be secure against lethal poisons distributed, whether by private individuals or government officials, is because our forefathers, despite their considerable wisdom and foresight, could conceive of no such problem. An informed consent amendment is already provided a constitutional basis by the Ninth Amendment, which states that, in addition to the specific rights enumerated in the Constitution, there are, quote, "others retained by the people," unquote. History, however, has shown that specific rights must necessarily be specified if they are to be upheld. Nothing could be more specific than two questions posed by Carol Van Strum. One, do I or do I not have the right to know the effects of the stuff you intend to expose me to? And the second, do you or do you not have to get my permission before exposing me to it? A constitutional amendment would not be an instant or complete solution to the problems of pesticides, and government and industry will spend millions of dollars fighting it. But as Van Strum says, in opposing informed consent, government and industry would have to admit that toxic exposure does occur and that people have no right either to know about it or stop it. They would have to convince the public that ignorance and helplessness are preferable to knowledge and control. And that's Carol Van Strum again. In the meantime, the insects we attempt to eradicate continue to build resistance to pesticides, which provokes development of ever more toxic chemicals. For humans to build resistance will take hundreds of generations at roughly three generations a century. New insect generations occur in a matter of days or weeks. The chemical control of plants and insects turns out to be a greater menace to ourselves than to its targets. Future historians may well be amazed by our own distorted sense of proportion, Rachel Carson wrote in Silent Spring. How could intelligent beings seek to control an unwanted species by a method that contaminated the entire environment and brought the threat of disease and death even to their own kind? And that was something I wrote. The Sprays of Spring. And with gratitude to Rachel Carson and Carol Van Strum, also to Mary Sellen and Dee Mayatel of Ocean, and Helen Patty Hill, whose articles on pesticides in issues of the North Coast Times Eagle provided the essential research for this article. If you seem to hear a horn in the background, it's somebody blowing his whistle out on the river, which is a nice backdrop here in River City. Now I'd like to read something that Tom Hartland pulled off the internet, not the wire. I started in newspaper when there were wire machines, and that was my job as the oldest copy boy in the Western world, I believe. I was 22. Pulling copy off the wires and running them to the copy editor. And this article, it was published Saturday, April 10th, 2010, by CommonDreams.org. And its title is This Factory Farming's Tobacco Moment by Will Allen and Ronnie Cummins. Will Allen is a farmer, community organizer, activist, and writer who farms in Vermont. His first book, The War on Bugs, was published by Chelsea Green in 2008. And Ronnie Cummins is an organizer, writer, and activist, and he's the international director of the Organic Consumers Association and co-author of the book Genetically Engineered Food, A Self-Defense Guide for Consumers. His organization's website is www.organicconsumers.org. Is This Factory Farming's Tobacco Moment by Will Allen and Ronnie Cummins. The nation's chemical and energy-intensive food and farming system, Food Inc., is out of control, posing a mortal threat to public health, the environment, and climate stability. Economically stressed and distracted consumers have become dependent on a factory farm system designed to provide cheap processed food that may be cosmetically perfect and easily shipped, but which is seriously degraded in terms of purity and nutritional value. USDA studies reveal that the food currently grown on America's chemical-intensive farms contains drastically less vitamins and essential trace minerals than the food produced 50 years ago, when far less pesticides and chemical fertilizers were used, and which, you know, was just about the time that Rachel Carson wrote her book and warned us about sprays and pesticides. As even Time magazine has admitted recently, given the hidden costs of damage to public health, climate stability, and the environment, conventional factory farm, food is extremely expensive. Much of Food Incorporated's common fare is not only nutritionally deficient, but also routinely contaminated, laced with pesticide residues, antibiotics, hormones, harmful bacteria and viruses, genetically modified organisms, GMOs, and toxic chemicals. Like tobacco, factory farm food is dangerous to your health. No wonder organic food is by far the fastest growing segment of U.S. agriculture. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, the California Department of Agriculture, CDFA, and the Environmental Working Group, EWG, have shown that many of the nation's favorite foods are contaminated with a lethal cocktail of the most toxic chemicals, putting consumers, and especially children and infants, who are up to 100 times more sensitive to toxic chemicals, at risk. For those living in factory farming communities and working on farms, the constant exposure to the most toxic pesticides poses an even greater risk than the general population for cancer, birth defects, asthma, Parkinson's, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, Alzheimer's, liver, kidney, heart disease, and many other ailments. 48% of United States women now get cancer, as well as 38% of men. There is now conclusive evidence that exposure to farm and household chemicals, including body care and cleaning products, greatly increase your chances of getting cancer or other serious diseases. This is why there are large and growing clusters of cancers and birth defects in farm and urban communities all over the United States. These clusters are a direct result of the use of toxic pesticides and fertilizers on our farms, ranches, gardens, and lawns. Several recent French court decisions have determined that farmers are suffering from leukemia, Parkinson's, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and melanoma cancers as a result, direct result of chemicals they've used on their farms. The chemicals causing these cancers and leukemia are the same chemicals used to grow food in the United States. Besides the damage to human health from pesticide use, chemical agriculture's use of synthetic fertilizers and sewage sludge have polluted the nation's streams, creeks, rivers, oceans, drinking water, and millions of acres of farmland. According to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Environmental Working Group, two-thirds of the U.S. population is drinking water contaminated with high levels of nitrates and nitrates caused by nitrate fertilizer runoff from factory farms. Large areas along our coastlines, bays, and gulfs have become dead zones as a result of excess nitrogen fertilizer and sewage sludge flowing into them. Serious illness and death are directly attributable to high levels of nitrates and pesticides in drinking water. Factory farming's carbon footprint is also huge. Government officials have consistently failed to regulate agriculture's greenhouse gas emissions or even admit that they are a serious problem. Most official estimates of greenhouse gas pollution of U.S. agriculture range from a ridiculously low 7% to 12% of total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions, GHG. Recent analysis has demonstrated that U.S. factory farms and industrial agriculture are responsible for at least 35% and possibly up to 50% of greenhouse gas emissions. Unfortunately, agriculture is currently exempted from even weak U.S. efforts to control greenhouse gases, including the recent cap-and-trade legislation passed by the House of Representatives. Hopefully, the most recent U.S. EPA directives in December 2009 on curbing greenhouse gases will apply to agriculture, our most polluting industry. However, Just Say No, Republican and Democratic congressmen are doing the bidding of their pesticide, fertilizer, and petroleum clients instead of their constituents and have vowed to block any efforts by the EPA to regulate emissions. The farm and chemical industry may now be as vulnerable as the tobacco industry was in the 1990s. People in the U.S. have finally become suspicious of the safety of the non-organic food supply. Millions are wary of home pesticides, weed killers, and synthetic garden and lawn fertilizers. Big agricultural chemical companies are under increasing criticism from consumers, including relatives of those hospitalized and killed by farm chemicals and factory farm contaminated food. Giant tobacco corporations lied to the public for decades, claiming that cigarettes were safe. Similarly, chemical corporations in agribusiness have conducted a 100-year campaign to hide the dangers of their farm chemicals. They hired scientists in the 1920s and 1930s to lie to the public about the dangers of arsenic and lead, the most widely used pesticides of the era. They hired scientists in the 1950s and 1960s to counteract the criticism of DDT and the other World War II pesticides and fertilizers. In the mid-1960s and 1970s, corporate agribusiness and chemical giants like Monsanto put enormous resources into debunking the criticisms of toxic chemicals in Rachel Carson's Silent Spring and those of other public health and environmental activists. Chemical companies hired fake laboratories to give their most toxic chemicals a guarantee of safety in the 1980s and 90s. The EPA, Food and Drug Administration, and the USDA accepted these bogus reports as valid until independent scientists and safe food activists exposed the truth. The chemical industry has routinely stalled or neutered any chemical regulations passed in the United States. Much of the public still believes it is protected because Congress passed several landmark pesticide and chemical control laws in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. Unfortunately, the chemical corporations and corporate agribusiness have lobbied successfully against these laws, weakening or repealing them. As a result, only a handful of the 80,000 industrial chemicals or pesticides used in farming or found in consumer products have lost their federal or state registration in the last 40 years. As the co-author of this essay, Will Allen, concluded in his 2008 book, The War on Bugs, it is time to conduct a full-scale offensive against factory farming and industrial agriculture. It is time for consumers to stop buying chemical food and using poisonous chemicals on their lawns, gardens, and in their houses. It is time for executives and workers on factory farms to become whistleblowers. It is time for chemically assaulted farm workers and farmers to sue these killers. It is time for chemical and food industry employees and feedlot cowboys to expose factory farming's dirty secrets, just as high-level tobacco executives and tobacco workers did in the 1990s. It is time for courageous magazines or internet sites to refuse farm and home chemical advertisements. In 1905, Collier's magazine refused to publish any more patent medicine ads. Almost immediately, the Saturday Evening Post and the Ladies' Home Journal joined the boycott. This didn't solve the problem of useless patent medicines, but it provoked a public dialogue and the rejection of thousands of dangerous potions. The public exposure of these snake oil remedies saved countless lives. Similar bold moves need to be taken to protect us all from the ravages of Food Incorporated. Time magazine's recent exposure in August of 2009 of our dangerous and costly food system may be a signal that at least some reporters in the media are willing to expose the hazards of factory farms and chemical agriculture. Sadly, other media outlets continue to serve as cheerleaders for GMOs and industrial food. The New Yorker magazine and National Public Radio continue to carry Monsanto's ads claiming that genetically modified organisms crops use less pesticides and can feed the world's population, when in fact recent research has shown that GMO crops actually increase pesticide use. Other studies have demonstrated that yields of both GMO corn and soy are actually lower than non-GMO varieties. In the European Union, pesticides and farm chemicals have come under increased scrutiny since the EU instituted a rigorous chemical evaluation and registration process known as REACH, Registration, Evaluation, and Authorization of Chemicals. Many of the most toxic and profitable chemicals used in farming and consumer products could use their registration in the EU within the next few years. U.S. agricultural chemical lobbyists are worried that more aggressive regulations such as REACH are going to limit their sales in Europe and that more rigorous chemical enforcements are headed to the U.S. following the European example. It is time for the federal government to stop promoting and subsidizing factory farms and junk food. Food Incorporated's business-as-usual practices are destroying public health and the environment, destabilizing the climate and setting us up for disaster in the coming era of petroleum and water scarcity. It is time for the Obama administration and government regulators to place mandatory warnings on dozens of the most toxic foods, similar to the Surgeon General's warnings on tobacco products. We also need warning labels on pesticides and chemical fertilizers, as well as a wide range of consumer products. Given the regulatory coma of the FDA, the USDA, and EPA, we need to be careful about what we eat and feed our families. We must seek out and purchase organic foods and products whenever possible. Organic standards prohibit the use of toxic pesticides, chemical fertilizer, and GMOs. But we also need to be aggressive about demanding that the current factory farm system must change. It is, after all, our tax dollars that prop up the GMOs, chemical agriculture, and junk food of Food Incorporated. Our tax dollars literally subsidize the production of foods that cause diabetes, obesity, heart disease, and cancer. Recent studies indicate that 68% of the U.S. population is overweight, while 34% is obese. This fattening of America over the last 20 years is a direct result of the highly processed junk foods that we eat, loaded with fat, sugar, salt, and toxic residues. Only our collective voices, votes, purchases, and demands for fundamental reform and regulation can change the nation's dangerous system of food production and distribution. But don't wait for the regulators to act before you change your food habits. Organic and health-minded consumers are transforming the marketplace with their purchasing power all over the world. You can too. We need to demand that our presently out-of-control food and farming system be regulated like the mortgage, bank, insurance industries, and Wall Street. Agriculture has not been properly regulated for decades, if ever. EPA, FDA, and the USDA regulatory practices have been severely weakened by pro-agribusiness deregulatory administrations since Reagan. It's time to crack down on the hazardous practice of agribusiness. The time has come to stand up and be counted, to force the chemical, genetic engineering, petroleum, and sewage sludge corporations to bend to the people's will, to endure their own tobacco moment. Only then will Rachel Carson's hopes for a sustainable future be realized. Only then will a 21st century silent spring be averted. Only then will we be able to stop factory farming's assault on public health and all Earth's creatures, large and small. And that was Is This Factory Farming's Tobacco Moment by Will Allen and Ronnie Cummins. And now I'd like to read a poem. Pardon while I crackle this newspaper here. It's a poem written by Astoria's own, Margaret Lee Bowler. And she wrote this about 9 years ago, when she was still a young girl. I'm not sure how old Margaret is now, but I know she's in college. Or I think she is. And it's called Earth's Checklist, an Earth Day poem. Say what you think what you say, for what would Mother Nature do if she saw her Earth this way? If she saw all the pollution, all the smog, all the waste, all the careless forest fires, all the killings just from taste, all the rainforest destruction, the acid pouring from the sky, the shooting, the logging, killing species by and by, all the deadly fertilizer being sprayed upon the ground, the oil clogging up the beaches, yet the world is going round. What would Mother Nature do? What would Mother Nature do? First, she would put a stop to the pollution, clear the acid from the sky, prevent the careless forest fires, save each species by and by, stop the rainforest destruction and the smog and the waste, halt the shooting and most logging and the killings just from taste, ban the deadly fertilizer, start to clean up the ground, make our home a better place, the whole world round. But Mother Nature softly speaks, her voice is hard to hear, yet when she is listened to, she can be heard from far and near, and listen to her closely, for we've got some things to do. Come on, come here, and pull up a seat, for you can help on Earth Day too. Come, go get a move on, stop the pollution and the waste. After all, we are the future. Make our Earth a better place. Happy Earth Day, everyone. Margaret Lee Bowler. This has been Michael McCusker.